All right, for our scripture Bible study, if we would turn to 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings chapter 3. So here we have an account that kind of winds back in time from where 1 Kings left us. 1 Kings talked about the death of Jehoshaphat, the king of the southern kingdom. But here in 2 Kings chapter 3, we have an account that speaks of a situation that occurred in his lifetime. And I presume that the reason that it falls at this point in the record is that the prophet Elisha, who, of course, followed Elijah, is the prophet who figures in it. And so from this point forward, there are a number of accounts having to do with the prophet Elisha. And so here we have an account, as I mentioned, that includes Jehoshaphat, who was the king of the southern kingdom. He was, for the most part, a godly man. He did make peace with Ahab, the king of the northern kingdom. And in fact, he ended up taking Ahab's daughter as a wife for his son. And she ends up being nothing but trouble, of course. We know her as Athaliah, and she did all kinds of wicked things, including putting to death her grandchildren, and you know, just lots of bad stuff. So and I think it's interesting that we have indication that that family had some negative influence on Jehoshaphat. As I said, for the most part, he was a good king. There's, you know, a number of very commendable things that he did. There's a wonderful record in 2 Chronicles about his trusting in the Lord in a time of battle, and just a wonderful account as he led the southern kingdom in that confidence in the Lord. So again, it's helpful to be reminded that even in the best of us, there are weak points. And that was true, of course, in David, in Solomon, in Jehoshaphat, and it is true in every one of us. And so here we have a king who, as I say, for the most part is a godly man, but he does have some weak points. And one of his weak points is his relationship with Ahab and Ahab's family. The account here deals with the second of Ahab's sons to sit on the throne. The first was Ahaziah. He only reigned 2 or 3 years and died, fell through a lattice on his roof, and died from the injuries from that. And now Jehoram, who is also a son of Ahab, reigned in the place of his brother, because his brother had no sons. So chapter 3 of 2 Kings, verse 1. Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. And he reigned 12 years. And he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and like his mother. Of course, his mother was Jezebel. For he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, he cleaved unto the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which made Israel to sin. He departed not therefrom. And of course, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, was the first king of the northern kingdom, and his notorious sin that keeps getting mentioned again and again and again is that he set up a calf to worship, an idol, in Bethel in the south and in Dan in the north, and set up altars there, and basically counterfeited the worship of the true Lord with this false worship. And so the northern kingdom never departed from that. From the very first king right up to the last king, they did not depart from that. So here is a man who did not worship Baal as his parents did, but he is not true in his worship of the Lord. And we're told in verse 4 that Misha, king of Moab, was a sheep master and rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with the wool. And it came to pass when Ahab was dead that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And King Jehoram went out of Samaria the same time and numbered all Israel. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, who is his sister's father-in-law, sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, "The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you go with me against Moab to battle?" And Jehoshaphat said, "I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses." And he said, "Which way shall we go up?" And he answered, so this would be Jehoram, I believe, answers, the way through the wilderness of Edom. And so what is happening here is that they, rather than taking the short route, which would have been on the north end of the Dead Sea, to cross over and go into Moab, they're going all the way down on the western side of the Dead Sea to the bottom of the Dead Sea and then come up through Edom. And so I presume that there was some battle stratagem in choosing that route and that line of attack. But one thing that is different here is that when Jehoram's father, Ahab, asked Jehoshaphat if Jehoshaphat would join him in battle against Ramoth-Gilead, Jehoshaphat said, "Let's ask of the Lord first." And, of course, it was on that occasion that Micaiah, the prophet of the Lord, predicted the death of Ahab in battle. And so on this occasion, Jehoshaphat does not initially ask, "Let's ask the Lord about this." So he agrees and agrees to the plan of going down south to Edom, which they do. And verse 9 tells us that the king of Edom joined them in the fight. And so these three kings and their people, their armies, fetched a compass of 7 days' journey. And the problem is they run out of water. And of course, that's a major problem because you need water to survive. And so the king of Israel says, verse 10, "Alas, the Lord has called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." But Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him?" Okay, so I guess better late than never. But Jehoshaphat finally says, "Well, we should ask the Lord." And so he asks about a prophet. One of the king of Israel's servants is aware that Elisha is somewhere relatively near at hand. And so Jehoshaphat says, verse 12, "The word of the Lord is with him." So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him, to Elisha. And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, "What have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father and to the prophets of thy mother." So he's speaking to the king of Israel. And so get yourself to the prophets of Ahab, the prophets of Jezebel, which of course we know that there were many of them, even after Elijah killed a whole whack of them. And these were false prophets, of course. So Elisha initially speaks to redirect the king of Israel. And the king of Israel, middle of verse 13, says, "No, for the Lord has called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." And so that, of course, is what he had said earlier, verse 10. And that is at least indicating some measure of concern on his part, and obviously prompted by the lack of water. And again, we don't know entirely what the heart of the king of Israel is thinking. He obviously had agreed with Jehoshaphat to seek a prophet of the Lord. But initially, Elisha was going to say, you know, "Forget it," my paraphrase. And in verse 14, Elisha said, "As the Lord of hosts live, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee." Right? So he's basically saying to the king of Israel, if it weren't for the presence of Jehoshaphat, I wouldn't even talk to you. Right? So here's a prophet of the Lord, Jehoram, son of Ahab, wicked man. Father was a wicked man. Mother was a wicked woman. And no real interest in serving the Lord. And Elisha says, I won't even talk to you. But Jehoshaphat was there. And so this is, to me, is very interesting. And I think this is one of the sort of interesting testimonies here. And again, whether or not Jehoshaphat should have been with Jehoram, I think it's likely that we can say that he should not have been. You have record in 2 Chronicles, after he joins with Ahab, a prophet comes to Jehoshaphat and says, "What are you doing aiding the enemies of the Lord?" Right? And so he probably was where he shouldn't have been. But nonetheless, the Lord is willing to talk to him through Elisha. And what we find here is that as Elisha seeks the Lord, verse 15, he says, "Bring me a minstrel, a musician." It came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon Elisha. And he said, "Thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, you shall not see wind, neither shall you see rain, yet that valley shall be filled with water, that you may drink, both you and your cattle and your beasts." So in other words, I'm going to provide for your immediate need, which was water. And verse 18, "This is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand." All right. And so what happens is they dig the ditches. And verse 20 tells us that there came water by the way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. So what is interesting is that there was no wind, there was no rain, so there's no storm. There's no way that in their local presence that there would be reason for water to come, right? And so the Lord is miraculously sending water, and it's flowing, it would appear, as opposed to dropping, right? So there was no precipitation, but this water is flowing from the south, from Edom, and it's filling up those ditches. And of course, what is interesting is the king of Moab obviously wouldn't have expected water, because there was no wind, there was no rain, right? It's dry. He knows it's dry. And so as he gets up in the morning and looks against the sun, right, the sun reflecting off of the water in those ditches in the valley, and he sees it red as the reflection of the sun, and perhaps mixed with some reddish clay that is not a stranger to that area. He supposes that the three kings had a falling out and they've done themselves in. And so rather than approaching for conflict, he approaches for spoil. And so he's unprepared for the battle that ensues. And the three kings work a great victory, and it talks about how they go through and conquer many of the cities. The final city, the capital, they are the king of Moab flees to it, and he actually offers his own son next in line for the throne as a sacrifice. And the indication is that so incensed the Moabites that they put a fierce battle on, it would appear. And so Israel ends up departing. They don't destroy that last city. So that's the recounting of the events. And so then the observations that I would make having to do with prayer. Okay, so again, we recognize that the Lord's face would have been against Jehoram for his wickedness. And yet, because of the presence of Jehoshaphat, the Lord is pleased to provide an answer, and a favorable answer in this case. And that, to me, is a reminder of the role that the people of God have to be salt and light where we are. And our praying can benefit our nation. It can benefit our city, our province, our city. It could even benefit a workplace, right? Even though most of those people are wicked, ungodly people, right? Even though most of those people have no real interest in fearing the Lord or serving the Lord or even knowing the Lord, right? But God's people have a part to play in seeking the welfare of the places where they are. And in fact, when the Israelites' southern kingdom is taken off into captivity, ultimately for their own wrongdoing, the prophet Jeremiah instructs them in captivity is to seek the prosperity of those places where you are, right? You, the people of God, are sent there and have a responsibility there. So to me, that's quite interesting that here in this undertaking, the Lord was pleased to provide answer because Jehoshaphat was present. So that, to me, I think is an interesting example. The other thing that is interesting here is that Elisha does not directly provide an answer, right? When they first come to him, and he has his back and forth, but he says, okay, I'll seek the Lord. What he does is he asks for this minstrel. He asks for a musician. And we aren't told exactly why, but evidently through the ministry of that musician, his spirit was quieted. Perhaps he was stirred up a little bit with Jehoram coming and so on. And in any case, his spirit is quieted and he is able to come before the Lord, and the Lord provides this answer. And so there is this idea, I think, of sometimes it's needful for us to quiet our hearts before the Lord. You know, there's much turmoil, much activity, much distraction, much other kinds of things going on, and sometimes it's helpful for us just to pause, right, and to approach the Lord. And even it's a testimony to the ministry of music, right, in a helpful way. Obviously, the right kind of music. There's a wrong kind of music, right, a worldly kind of music, but with a godly kind of music, there is a ministry, a spiritual ministry to one's heart, even through that means. And so here the Lord is willing to provide deliverance for these kings and really success in battle. And it's largely because there is a man who, for the most part, is a good man. And he urges them to seek to inquire of the Lord, to find a prophet of the Lord, and to inquire of him. So let us take our place in the place where we are. And as we have opportunity, even if we're really in the presence of people that don't know the Lord, sometimes maybe, you know, just to offer, why don't we pray, right? And that can sometimes have a ministry. I know, just for example, when in visiting Bud, when he was in the hospital there, and there were a number of occasions where, you know, just ask his family, are you okay if we just pray? And some of them, of course, are believers, and they're more than happy for that. But even the ones that weren't, there's a testimony there, right? And so I think we have encouragement to that end in this example of Jehoshaphat and Elisha.